Danny Netzer is the head Krav Maga instructor for the Israeli Defense Force. His responsibilities include putting together the training programs and overseeing the syllabus that's delivered to every single soldier in the Israeli army. He heads the Krav Maga Instructors School, which trains the instructors themselves that teach Krav Maga throughout all of the Israeli army. And he debriefs and studies all instances in which Krav Maga is used by soldiers in real life to protect themselves and to survive real violent confrontations in the Israeli army. Danny also happens to be a very good friend of mine and a longtime training partner. I originally met Danny when we were both young soldiers back in 2001. This one has been one of the best podcasts, in my opinion, that I've had so far, and also maybe one of the most challenging ones. Me and Danny certainly don't see eye to eye on everything, but I believe that's part of what makes this one so interesting. So enjoy. Evil thrives when good men and women do nothing, when they fail to make a stand. This podcast is about giving you the tools and the information to make that stand. I'm Ron Engelman, Master Sergeant, Krav Maga Black Belt, IDF combat veteran, proud Jew, and grandson to Holocaust survivors. This is the Ron Engelman Podcast. Can you tell me a little bit about your role debriefing and studying instances in which Krav Maga was used in the military successfully and maybe sometimes not successfully?
For example, one of the last situations, we had a guy on the officer course that was patrolling, navigating alone at night. And he was alone at some hostile village. And in the middle of the night, he was tired with all the load on his, all the carriage on his body. And in the least of 1 second, he found himself in a rifle abduction attempt. Some guy pulled his car over, jumped on him, and tried to take his gun over. And the officer is reacted because he had what we call the muscle memory of his training, and he did an excellent job, and he managed to save his rifle and to win the situation. And that was very, very short, but of course, complete surprise. He was completely tired in the middle of navigation, concentrated on completely different task. So I investigate this case. I speak with him. I try to understand if what he knew, what he trained, was good enough, if it was connected to his reaction, if the way he reacted is combined with what he did before, what he remembered, what he advised to me, if he need to prepare himself or prepare or advise other soldiers to prepare to a situation like this, what he understands they need to do. And from this, I take Mesik Maskanot, how you say.
I draw conclusions.
Okay, I make a conclusions, and we try to improve. Okay, well, you need to understand when we talk about a normal soldier, even if it's infantry or paratrooper or even some special unit, usually they don't have a background. And in short period of time,
background in Krav Maga or martial arts.
Krav Maga or martial arts, yes. And in short period of time, they need to study a lot of different tools and skills. And one of the skills is hand-to-hand combat. And they don't do it for years or many lessons. In best scenario, they maybe will have one class per week for some period. And we need that to be very, very effective and very, very connected to what he able to do in the reality, and it should work in a real situation, for sure, okay, without any preparation. So he do little within his basic training, then he do little when he do Aksharat Pikud Mitkademet, when he do some advanced training, then when he make his officer course, he do more of the same, maybe a little from different aspect, but more of the same, all in goal to build this muscle memory that will work in the reality. Because if it won't work, we just wasting our time. Okay, so it be very, very specific. And it's not an easy job to be
accurate.
To be accurate, yes. This is the most important thing, to be accurate. Okay. That's it.
What do you mean by accurate? What in relation to the training, in relation to the techniques taught, you, this is the second time you mentioned about the importance of being accurate.
When this guy successfully finished this hand-to-hand situation, this Krav Maga situation, and won, I want him to say, listen, Dani, or say to his Krav Maga instructor, listen, whoever, what we did in training was exactly the same thing I experienced on a real situation. It was bull, how we say in Hebrew, exactly inside. The training was accurate, completely 100%. This is what we try to do. Because if the training was good, but was not like a real situation, it's not accurate. So I think this is what we try to do in every training, okay, in every other field. You need to give the specific tools to the soldier to succeed in their mission. And a hand-to-hand combat is not an exception, it's the same.
So what you're saying is that the most important thing in the field, in Krav Maga, but in general, in preparing for combat, is that the training should mimic and give the most accurate representation of the combat itself, so that we're preparing soldiers for what we're, and that's kind of like where we keep on sharpening our blade to be able to give the maximum preparation to one thing, which is the situation where that specific soldier, you know, can find themselves.
Yeah, but you need to take in consideration that he have no martial art background, that his training is short, that is in reality the situation may be completely different from what he trained, and his mental abilities, tiredness, maybe he will be with full luggage on him, maybe he will be a little afraid, I don't know. We need to take all these parameters in consideration and make his training the best and the most accurate. I think this is the most important. That's what I try to do, to make the training more and more accurate from year to year, to give the soldier the best tool. Maybe it's not the best technique, maybe it's not the most effective thing, but it should be the most effective when you take into consideration all different parameters we have. Okay.
So we've got the situation on the one side. We want to reflect the situation, but also the individual themselves. So for example, we're not training in the military. We're not training professional martial artists. We're not training UFC champions. I'd assume that if you were, you know, if you had a class full of, let's say, you know, professional mixed martial artists or UFC fighters that, you know, fight for a living, the training would look somewhat different than what it looks like when you're training combat soldiers. But then again, maybe is there a difference between combat soldiers and non-combat soldiers, between training men or training women, between training? So how do you bridge those gaps?
So first of all, when I train a professional sportsman, I also come from this field. I do it for years. So it's different. You understand the game.
Which is that? Can you give us a bit of detail about your professional fighting experience?
I have, I believe, 30 professional fights. I think half of them was in the kickboxing and half of them in professional boxing. And I'm still training in these fields and also teaching guys that compete themselves. So I'm a part also of the combat game, the combat sport. So I by the way, it's the same. The accuracy of training, I think, is the most important part. You need to understand the problem. What is the problem that the guy will deal with? And then you need to give him all this, you need to give him the best preparation to this specific problem. If it's stand-up game or ground game or MMA game, Okay, we need to take in consideration the how long will be the fight. If it's 4-round fight, 6-round fight, maybe it's a 5-minute round. Okay, what he allowed and not allowed to do. Okay, so he need to be prepared exactly. For example, when we speak about hand-to-hand combat, there is almost no how you say gishushim, warm-up part
in no, professional fighting. You don't feel each other out at the beginning.
You don't feel each other out
at the beginning of the round. You don't.
In professional fighting, I think first 15 seconds really nothing happened. Just a feeling out process. Who you're standing with? You try to feint a little bit. You want to see his reaction. You do nothing. In hand-to-hand military Krav Maga world, everything ends up to 15 seconds. So this is completely different mindset. So I'm not sure that even professional fighter, if he trained only to professional fight, will be very successful in hand-to-hand situation because it's completely different. Okay, so you need to be completely specific in what you do. Okay, so in you need to analyze the problem before you start to give this. I like to speak in a word of problem and solution. Okay, before you teach the solution, you need to really understand the problem. Okay, and this is what we're trying to do, to understand the problem. And after we understand, we try to give the solution. And we understand this should be a mechanical skill that soldier will get, but also mental ability to come from 0 to 100 in less of a second. He should be able to apply these things also physically and mentally. Okay, it's we don't live in a world that we hit each other in the face anymore on a daily basis, at least most of us. So it's a bit a problem. Okay, so for example, there are cases that you speak with a soldier that he got all the tools. Okay, all the mechanical tools that he need to know, but he was not to been able to execute them because he had some
mental blockage.
Mental blockage on his ability to execute his abilities. So we need to take this in consideration too. How you do it? How you give him this ability to be a normative guy all over his day and all his life, but in a real situation he need to become a human weapon, okay, and after this become normal again. Okay, so this is a very delicate delicate field of training, and you need to understand in physical abilities, but also in the mental abilities.
So what you're saying is you need to also understand the spirit of the human. It's almost like a philosophical or psychological abilities as a Krav Maga instructor. If you want to train people, it's what you're saying. It's not just the mechanics, but you also have to understand the mind. You have to meet them where they are and help them go where you need to take them.
Yeah, also when you talk about professional sport, there is a, how you say, misanenet?
There's like a filter.
There is a natural filter that people that find out they don't fit to this activity, to this sport, they will just train for fun or maybe leave. And this is not what happened in the military. Military, you start your training, okay, and you need to finish. Everybody need to do, okay. So you like it or you not like it.
The Krav Maga part, right?
Every part, but of course I'm talking about the Krav Maga part. The Krav Maga part, you maybe feel today that you not want to train Krav Maga, but you need. Maybe you feel that is. Your nature is different. Okay, you're not aggressive enough, but this tool you need to have as a combat soldier. If you want to be combat soldier, you need to understand that maybe someday in your mandatory service or maybe Shirut Miluim, your reserve service, you will find yourself in a zero in a contact range with an enemy. You need to use this tool. Okay, and you need to understand, like it, not like it. You need to train. Okay, so there is less filtering process. We need to serve this tool to everybody. Okay, this is
This so what you're saying difference. Is, you know, if I'm going into boxing, let's say I'm going to my boxing academy and I have these ideas that, you know, I really like boxing and I want to become, you know, I want to have a few fights, maybe professionally or amateur. If I can't make the transition to, you know, I enjoy getting punched, I enjoy punching other people, I enjoy pushing myself, which is not, it's not a natural thing. Most people don't enjoy getting hit. It's something that maybe we'll leave it at that. So if you can't deal with getting punched in the face, you just don't do boxing. You go do something else. But if you want to be a combat soldier, you have to go through Krav Maga. And Krav Maga involves getting hit. Krav Maga involves, you know, pushing yourself in very extreme environments. And even for combat soldiers, what I've seen is you can have tough guys who are, you know, can do all the obstacle courses and can deal with the lack of sleep and can deal with all the pain and the physical challenges of training to become a combat soldier. But then when you put them in the ring, can be quite overwhelming. If you've never really been hit, somebody comes and, you know, hits you with all their might in your liver, drops you, you can't breathe. And the commander says, get back up, or your Krav Maga instructor, get back up, continue fighting. And you don't get to say, you know what, I've had enough of this, I don't enjoy this, I'm walking out. Because if you walk out, you're not going to finish. You have to pass your Krav Maga to become a combat soldier, especially in the special forces unit where, you know, things can be quite tough and demanding. It's part of your selection. If you can't do that, I guess maybe that's something that you're going towards, that you're not there because you like it. You're there because, you know, you have to pass it as a soldier.
By the way, the opposite is also true. You can be a very good hand-to-hand combat because you have a background. And you feel very comfortable in this situation, but you're not comfortable to deal with cold or with lack of sleep or with lack of food. And it's the same as and your friends that you beat them in the Krav Maga classes beat you in other things. So mm-hmm. being a combat soldier is combined from very, very different parameters. But yes, if we concentrate on the Krav Maga, of course, this is one of the fields when a soldier meets something that he never did before. Maybe he did, last time he did it was in the kindergarten. This is a 1995.
Last time he had a physical altercation.
Physical contact, that he hit somebody or somebody else hit him or push him or bite him or whatever. And that's why this training is so unique, and the commanders like this training because you can test the soldier, you can prepare him, you can also... There is no mask to hide behind in the Krav Maga class. Okay, you may immediately, it's very obvious to see what kind of person you are, who you are. You're aggressive, you're not aggressive, you're impulsive, you're not impulsive. You go forward or you're afraid, you turn your back or you try to deal with the situation. So immediately you can see what kind of person, how you think under stress, what happened with you under stress. Also, so in very, very fast, it's a very fast tool also to see who is the guy that the commander can see who is standing in front of him. And also you yourself can study about yourself, what I'm able to do and how I deal with stressful situation. And you can do it very fast.
Mm.
So this is, I think it's a very important tool to train a soldier.
That connects to what you were talking about earlier about the mental blockage. And that's something that I've kind of taken away. I find that another place where Krav Maga differentiates, because there's a lot of similarities, but one of the places where Krav Maga differentiates from, let's say, competitive sport is the environment in which we carry it out. And I don't mean by the fact, you know, that, okay, Krav Maga has no rules. That's obvious. That's a cop-out. That's not even very interesting. To me, it's important, but it's when I'm going into a boxing match, whether it's competitive or whether it's just in my, you know, in my home gym, I'm ready. I know what I'm there for. Everything is kind of like there's a ceremony behind it. We warm up, the bell rings, like you said, we start feeling each other out, and then gradually we get, you know, there's the whole ceremony that builds up, and I'm prepared. I've come in to the boxing class or to the boxing match or to the jiu-jitsu class or whatever competitive style it is, and I'm there and I'm prepared. And I've trained on executing my techniques in that environment. And where self-defense differentiates and what we have to prepare for Krav Maga is that I've been training on my techniques. So I can do the mechanics, but now, by definition, whenever I have to use my skills, it's almost where I'm the least prepared, at least as a soldier. If I'm carrying a weapon and I saw the threat coming, maybe I could use my weapon or I could use lethal force. If I've found myself in a position where I have to use my hands, also as a soldier, but also as a civilian, it means I'm completely unprepared. And that's maybe where we find this mental blockage that you speak about. Can you go a bit more into that, into preparing, into dealing with that, how you can prepare yourself and the soldiers that you're training to be able to take their skills that they've learned in the training hall and overcome that mental blockage of facing violence and malevolence if somebody really wants to hurt you, that you just came out of nowhere?
So as I said before, you need to clearly understand the situation you're going to deal with. Okay, maybe the easier part in combat sports that you are completely, that your trainer, I want to believe, if you have a good trainer, he completely understands the situation that you're going to deal with. So all his preparation, very specific. He also can imitate in the gyms the specific fight that you're going to go through. It still will be very hard, but at least he tried to make you ready for this. Okay, in Krav Maga, as you said, it's different. Okay, it usually will happen by surprise. In most of the cases, situation maybe will be little like what you trained, but not exactly the same. Your also mental aspect, maybe you won't be ready in this specific situation to deal with it because you was thinking about something else. Because if you're ready to fight, you can avoid the fight. But the attacker attacks you because you were completely unready or unaware of the situation, so you get inside it. Okay. So, first of all, you need to understand. Okay. Second, you need to change maybe your living. Okay. The way you approach life, the way what you do every day. You cannot be a completely normal person every day, work in the office and whatever. And when somebody attacks you with a knife and try to kill you, immediately you become a Superman. You remove your glasses and you. Okay. This is the difference from combat soldier and a civilian. Okay, when the soldier is a combat soldier, he need to be always warrior. I'm warrior from even when I sleep, I'm a warrior. I'm all the time ready to react 100%. Okay, and if I'm all day ready, my ability to react in a split second will be much, much higher than a person that he live in some, let's call it a normal world, and then immediately he need to fight for his life like he is a beast in the jungle. Okay. So you need to live by that all day. Okay. And of course, to keep this tension level, you need to continue and to train all the time, but also your training should be specific to this situation. Aggressive, okay, from 0 to 100, okay, from unready situation start to go again. Okay, and I think also it's very demanding, because when you're a professional sportsman, you have a fight, so you concentrate your preparation on 4 or 5, I don't know, maybe 6 weeks, depends what level you are, what the training camp. When you go to a fight, you take all your mental force and you concentrate in one point, one day, one fight. Okay, I remember myself before fight, it's different feeling. Even evening before, you're ready to go to war. Okay, you feel it, your skin become more sensitive, you smell better, you see better. Okay, all your senses, you become like an animal. Okay, that will be before attack. This is what happened before fight. And when you need to prepare to a Krav Maga situation, you need to be always on some level of readiness, okay, if you want to be successful. Okay, and it's very hard, very demanding, very, very, take a lot of resources from your body and soul. So real combat training and to be a real combat fighter, it's very, very demanding. Maybe that's why they go to their retirement very early. Mm. Okay, and I think it's all around the world because you cannot continue with this for many years.
Mm. You raise a useful point that there's this other element. It's in addition to knowing the techniques and being able to execute them, it's the regular training that keeps you aware and in the mindset. It's the same thing with shooting, and certainly the same thing with Krav Maga. Maybe you learned and you can do all the skills and you have the, let's say, the motor ability, but the training keeps that level of maybe tension on the skill of the readiness, that maybe you learned all this stuff, but if you stop training for maybe a year, it's not necessarily so much that you forgot how to do it, but it's not at your grasp. You can't do that quick switch. And that's an argument for if you want to be able, if you want the skills to be there on the ready, you need to be refreshing and training them on a regular basis, as you would with pistol shooting. You need to constantly refresh your shooting. You might be a very good marksman at one stage, but if you stop shooting for about a year, 2 years, it'll take time to get back into it, and you don't have that time when you're fighting for your life without any preparation for it.
The attitude and the mindset. This is the most important thing. You need to be ready all the time. Okay, because in the real situation, also when you train, you're limited in your training. In the real situation, first stab will be inside your body. You will need to block the second stab when you take out the blade of your body and try to stab you again. This is, will be a reality stab. You're really not practicing it. Maybe it won't hurt because of the adrenaline. Maybe you won't even feel it, but this is the situation. Maybe he hit you with a block or with a stick or even with a closed fist, and you will be groggy, and you need immediately, okay, to start to fight back. Okay, and in order to be ready all the time, you need to keep your mindset all the time. This, I think, all the elite forces understand, and also elite security force in Israel. Okay, they train all the time. Okay, because they want their guy to react immediately if something happens. I think it's the hardest part. Always be ready to do. Of course, you need also to know how to relax. You cannot live like that. Okay, mm. When you're on job, you're on job, and when you relax, you relax. Okay, but
that's an interesting parallel, right? Because in combat, and my background, I still serve as combat infantry in the IDF, and it's really the seconds, it's the initial seconds that not always, but very often, they're the ones that determine the outcome of the fight, of the battle. And that's what we're training constantly. It's that initial response when you get shot at. It's like, now what do you do? You don't have rounds, and in competitive sports, it's not, you know, at a certain level, it's not that, yes, you know, knockouts do sometimes happen in the first 10 seconds, but that's extremely, extremely rare. That's not really what we're training to knock out our attacker in 10 seconds. We're training for a different environment. So the tools are the same, but I think Krav Maga definitely sits on this aspect of you have to determine the fight, or I don't like to call it fight, you have to determine the violent altercation within the first seconds. Because A, if you don't, like in the situation with a knife, you're going to get killed because there's only so many stabs you can take before you die. And also, and this is something that I talk about a lot that I don't think many people realize, maybe it's not in your capacity to win a fight, the fight, maybe like a one-on-one on even grounds. Maybe the attacker's stronger than you. Maybe that they outnumber you. So what Krav Maga here plays is the initial response. It's my ability to block, to overwhelm my attacker, so that if I'm a civilian, I can get away. If I'm a soldier, I can operate my firearm, or somebody else, you know, my teammates can come and help me. And that's something very unique. And I think people maybe outside of the military often miss that part, that they think that they're training people for fights, you know, to be able to beat or to be able to overwhelm. And I think Krav Maga, yes, we have to be prepared, and you know, we have to train ourselves what happens if the fight keeps on going, but it's really about overwhelming within the first, you know, few seconds or even milliseconds.
I think the most important thing before you teach somebody or train somebody, you need to understand the goal of the training, or as I like to say, what problem you want to solve or you help your trainee to solve. This is the most important. I try before I train to understand completely what is the goal of the training. Because when you understand what you're training for, usually you will do less mistakes. Okay, because you understand the way you're going. Okay. When you don't know where you go, you start to walking around and usually do not smart things. Okay, this is the problem. So why I like combat sports, because the problem is very specific. This is your tools, that what he can do, that what you can do. You need to win. In order to win, you need to do ABC. The way you can win, it's ABC. Okay, whatever. The same with a combat zero range fighting with Krav Maga. It's the same. Okay, you need to understand. You need to understand the mentality of your attacker, that he will try to kill you immediately. This is what he's trying to do. He's trying to kill you. He's not trying to entertain you or to fight to show you that he's alpha male and you beta male. Okay, he tried to kill you. Okay, and you need to react immediately, because you may be a great fighter. For example, and there is a definition in combat sport like a slow starter. Okay, you start slow. Okay, if you a slow starter in Krav Maga, you will be dead. From 10 times of 10, you will be dead, because you won't be able to show what happened after you warm up, because you will be dead. Okay, so you cannot be a slow starter. It's, for example, okay, it's just different. It's the same. It's zero range, but it's different. Okay, when you understand what are the rules, or what are the environment, or what are no rules of the situation, so you understand what you're teaching. Okay, and this is the most important thing. So I'm not jealous of civilian instructors, because when it's my job is easy. I have a short course, short period. I exactly understand what is the situation. So I do all the sequence of the lessons. I know I teach you to be ready for this specific situation. When you train and when you teach civilians, what you teach them for fighting in the bar or what you understand what you need to. Okay, your goal is not always specific, or maybe you're not your goal is not always to win a fight. Maybe to make some environment to people come, to make them some club, make them to feel good about themselves. Maybe it's different goals, but
My understanding is something like this, and it took me a while to kind of figure it out, because it wasn't necessarily the way I was trained myself. I was growing up as a kid training Krav Maga, and then later as an adult, as an instructor. I ask my students and ask instructors when I train instructors what the goal is of Krav Maga. And, you know, because if we speak about boxing, if we speak about jiu-jitsu, if we speak about the competitive styles, it's obvious. The goal is to win. And it's, as you said, it's very defined in how we win, and also in what environment, who we're going to be fighting. I ask people what the goal of Krav Maga is, and they say to survive. And I say, we're all going to die sometime, right? You're going to fail that goal at some point. Hopefully it's when you're old, surrounded by your grandkids, but the goal can't be to survive. I differentiate and I say that the goal of Krav Maga is to disengage. It's to be able to separate between the attacker, whether it's to prevent altogether, where here there's no combat, so that's a separate, let's say, not a separate subject, but a related subject. But the goal of the, let's say, the mechanics of employing violence in Krav Maga, it's to disengage. And when I talk about it in that terms, whether it's rape prevention, whether it's, you know, a guy who's larger than her, you know, tries to grab her forcefully, her goal is to disengage, not to defeat them or to choke them out or to knock them out with punches. And that could be done by scratching, by biting, by headbutt, whatever you can do to be able to shock the person, to be able to disengage. Whether it's, you know, a soldier who's somebody's a terrorist coming to stab them. Again, their goal is not to win. Their goal is to disengage so that they can use their weapon. But winning is not necessarily, I don't have to. Sometimes winning could be pushing the attacker off of you so that your teammate can shoot them with their Tavor or M4.
It's winning. You need to do what you need to do to win. Of course, it's only a tool. I don't want him to use Krav Maga because I teach him Krav Maga and he throw his handgun away and he try to punch the attacker in the face. No, he need to kick him and
maybe we can find even ground and saying that just winning in Krav Maga is a bit higher level in terms of that. Winning can be not fighting. Winning can be disengaging so somebody else can come and destroy the attacker. Winning can be scratching a potential rapist in the face and running away. Where in boxing, the only way I can win is by overcoming, by defeating my opponent. And Krav Maga is not, it's certainly one of the things we can do is defeat. I wouldn't even say defeating. I don't care about my opponent. It might be the situation where I have to use so much violence that they're incapable of harming me any further. But maybe the situation doesn't call for that.
Okay, so you talk about one aspect of Krav Maga that we call self-defense. Okay, when I work with a warrior, combat soldier, his goal is to win the fight. Okay, this is what I teach and what I say the instructor to teach. They need to win by any means and circumstances. They need to find the way to win. Okay. When we teach uncombat soldiers, maybe for civilians, that the goal is self-defense, is to minimize harm for themselves and maybe, how you say, disengage. But it's problematic because when I have a short course, for example, a civilian come to me and they ask me, Dani, we want a 10 meeting course that we would do basic of self-defense. Okay, understand. I understand what they need to deal with. And I give tools. Maybe it will be only not only physical tools, but also verbal tools, how to prevent the situation, how to minimize the damage. But if I need to teach them for years, it become martial art. This is the problem. No, I don't know if it's a problem, but it become martial art. It become like a club to come to feel good. This is my club. I come to feel good. I feel my friends. Okay. It's good. I don't say it's not good, but I feel with the military Krav Maga, the security Krav Maga, it's very, very specific. This is the problem. This is the solution I teach you.
But as a security guard too, I think that's actually a good point because, okay, Krav Maga, we train the police officers, we train security, whether it's in the courts, whether it's bodyguards, and I don't think that holds up that it's that simple as win. Like if I'm a security guard at the court, and somebody comes in and tries to bash somebody else, my goal isn't to win, to knock them out, to make them incapable of fighting. I want to control, I want to resolve. Even as a combat soldier, like, it depends who's in front of me. If it's a life and death situation and I'm on my own and somebody comes with a knife and I have no other option, then, you know, I'll hit him with everything I've got. But if it's a 16-year-old kid who's, you know, just been mis... who's been inoculated, they're been completely brainwashed to kill a soldier, and I'm there with other soldiers, and I have an option of stopping myself from getting killed or stabbed, but I am at a good enough situation that I can get him off of me, maybe resolve the situation. I don't think it's as simple, this differentiation of military Krav Maga is destroy your opponent, kill them, and I don't think that's what you said, and other aspects of his self-defense. I think it still fits in the goal of disengage, get yourself away from the situation safely. If you have to kill the person in the process in front of you because you have no other choice, we're certainly prepared for that. And it's not necessarily from a humanitarian standpoint, although we can make an argument for that. It's about, you know, as simple as I don't have to win with my fist if I can get off of you and pull out a pistol, right? I don't have to, you know, go toe-to-toe to win against you if I can get off of you and my friends that are with me can take control of the situation. And I can't necessarily win if I have a responsibility as a police officer or as a security guard. My goal isn't to win by beating you. My goal is to get control of you, and not just by myself. So I think this holds up, and I don't think that there's such a big divide on that aspect of the Krav Maga between military Krav Maga and civilian Krav Maga. What maybe there's the divide is who you're training, why they're there, and also the scenarios that they're going to face. Because if you're training combat soldiers in the IDF, there's a very high likelihood, especially now, that they're going to be facing somebody who's going to come to stab them. That's very, for civilians, yes, but for soldiers, that's high. If civilians have other, let's say, threats that they need to be prepared for.
Yeah, so let's agree that in purpose that your training will be successful, you need to understand what you're training for. Mm-hmm. In the best resolution you can. So what is the problem? Who you're training for the problem, and what tools can you give to, and what is the way you can solve the problem? Of course, it's not always to neutralize the attacker. Sometimes you need to control. If it's police force or security force, of course, you cannot use deadly force, but you need to understand all of it. And you also need to understand how you test it, okay, in order to try if you're successful in your training or not. How you test in combat sports, it's easy. You know, there is a fight. Okay, so you can test yourself as an instructor, and your trainee can test himself if his training is successful or he's living dreams. Okay, so in our field, it's a little bit more problem because you need to wait for somebody to attack you with an axe. Maybe it won't happen. Maybe it will happen and you will be dead. So it was an unsuccessful training. Okay, so you need to find a way also how you test your skill. Okay, during training, this is also one of the different, one of the important fields that we need to think about, how you test yourself.
That's actually a point that I want to maybe go into a bit more detail on. And we've been talking about the differences, maybe some ways that Krav Maga is, you know, unique or is applicable for self-defense. But one thing that I think we have a lot that we can benefit and maybe learn from the competitive fighting styles is that you won't find in boxing arguments whether, you know, this technique or this training is effective or it's not effective. It's very simple. Like, we get into the ring and
sometimes,
we see it.
Sometimes you will. Sometimes it happens too in boxing, but you can test it easily.
Exactly. You can test it easily. Maybe the argument would be, is this applicable? But that's not so interesting for boxing. It's like, okay, if I'm playing soccer, is this soccer kick going to be applicable for playing, let's say, rugby or football? Like, nobody cares about that. The question is, okay, is this boxing technique or is this move or is this training effective for boxing? I think if people are saying, oh, is boxing...
By the way, there is some technique that can be effective for one guy and maybe very ineffective for other guy, okay, in the end, but if we have how you say, madad objektivi, objective way to test it.
Okay. And that's
you
that's
win what, or you lose, you get hit or you hit back. Okay.
And that's what keeps sports like boxing, like jiu-jitsu, like wrestling, like kickboxing. I'd say it keeps them honest because you can't really fluff around. You can't really bullshit. Like, it either get in the ring, prove it, it works, or you get your ass kicked. Like, you either win or you lose. Unfortunately, we don't have that luxury in Krav Maga where I can put you in the situation that I'm training for 100%. I mean, sure, I can, I can put you in a t-shirt with Hebrew writing and send you to the, you know, worst neighborhood in Gaza, and then we'll see if you come back alive. You won't, but we can't actually do that without putting you in mortal risk of harm. Because, I mean, boxing and all these sports systems, what they've taken is they've taken violence and then they've put them in confines where we can do that relatively safely to one another without risking too much injury or death. And then we test it out. In self-defense, we've done none of that. And we don't want to do. So I can't put you in the conditions that I'm training you for without putting you in very, very real risk of death or serious bodily harm. So how do you test what you're teaching? How do you know that it works?
It's a tough question, but that's why I like limited fighting, combat fighting. So when you give different some rules and you let guys to fight, so at least maybe you don't see all the Krav Maga techniques, but you can see the fighting spirit. Okay, if the guy is fighting, okay, if he's giving back. Also in Krav Maga techniques, of course, you can use a heavy defensive gear and you can build a situation when your attacker is not cooperating with you. For example, things that I do, I let guys, soldiers from different units to attack other soldiers. Okay, like guy from Egoz, your unit is attacking guy from Duvdevan, for example, or opposite. Okay, so your attacker will try to choke you to death. Okay, of course, I'm there to prevent the injury. I think this is the art of teaching, how you study the lesson, okay, how you teach the lesson, but you don't charge the payment, you don't okay.
It doesn't exact the cost of
okay, yeah, so we find our way, okay. We instruct our attacker when they need to fade a little bit, when the attack is exact to vulnerable point, they a little bit fade. If not, they not. And we try during our training to give this feeling of the situation when you do the right thing, your attacker will fade little, step by step, and if not, not. This is the art of training Krav Maga. This is the problem, but also this is what we do. Okay, how you make your training, how you test your training in the most realistic way. Of course, there are also tool, heavy protection, a different tseva color, a simulation rifle. You can see if you will. The chance of success is high. But also, like in every kind of military training, there will be always a gap between your training and the reality. And it doesn't matter if you pilot, if you tank driver, or if you infantry soldier. Okay, the first time the somebody will shoot at you real ammunition will happen in the battlefield. Also, first time somebody will stab you in the neck, it will happen only in the battlefield. And this is the challenge, how you prepare your guy for that. Because, for example, in the MMA ring, you can try to do sport MMA fight, a training fight before you go to real fight. You can imitate the real fight more close to the reality than in Krav Maga. And also the definition, what is real fight? When you fight somebody your skill level with rules in a sterile environment, does it real fighting? It's kind of game. It can be very hard, very difficult, very aggressive game, but it's still a game because you know, man, if everything goes wrong, you hope the referee will stop.
So there's the other end. There's the testing and the training, but we discussed earlier, you're in a unique position where you review combat reports of soldiers who were in situations that they had to use Krav Maga and had to use the training that was either delivered by you or was delivered by instructors that you oversee and in charge of.
I try to investigate all the cases of close combat. I don't want to get into specific situation and names, but I think the difference is when they are combat soldier, they understand from here that they need to win the situation. They also do it. Our army is mandatory army. Okay, so people feel
like a mission or... That's a good
one. It's not like an obligation, but you feel from inside, you do it because you feel it's important to protect your people, your land, to protect yourself. So from the beginning, you start from a point that you are ready to sacrifice yourself. Okay, I think this is the most important, one of the important things in fighting. You need to be ready to sacrifice yourself and understand maybe you won't finish your day. Okay, and you will need to sacrifice yourself, but your friend will win the attacker, but you will sacrifice. This is so.
That's interesting. That's something that it's obvious as a soldier, and I think most soldiers understand this, but it's not something that I ever thought about in terms of the difference of, yeah, when you're there as a combat soldier, when you're, it also depends whether you're on mission, whether you're on your way home, where you're, you know, whether you're on a combat operation or whether you're just whatever, getting in between base to base. But when you're there in combat with the mindset, it's, and especially when you're young, maybe now when I'm a bit old and I've got kids at home, the mindset also shifts. But when you're there, it's about carrying out the mission. It's about protecting the people that you love. It's about, your personal safety. It's not really about certainly survival is part of it, but that's not all it is. And when you're a civilian or even when you're as a soldier, you know, on your way back home and then you get attacked, it's maybe the initial thoughts are about survival. That's very interesting that you put it like that. I haven't thought about it from that angle before.
Also, when you're a professional soldier, you choose it for living. Okay. Also, like if a professional fighter, you're ready to sacrifice yourself in some way to achieve what you believe in. I believe that most of the people don't fight professionally only for money. Okay. They need to fight. They have something inside themselves that drives them to do it. Also, when you're a soldier, it can be because you fight for your flag, for your friends, for your family, but you have a higher motivation than somebody took your parking spot.
Well, you hear about it from competitive fighters. Sometimes you hear the great champions going in saying that they went into the ring prepared to die, like that there was no option of leaving that ring and not winning or giving up. They went there prepared, their life was secondary. And that's interesting. That's certainly a parallel to the soldier of going in there. It's a different mindset. It's not about defense. It's about offense. It's about winning that situation. Okay, so here we go. We came full circle about this idea between winning or disengaging. And That's interesting, but it's not black and I keep on coming back to the thought of, God forbid, my wife or my sister getting attacked by somebody bigger than them. And same thing in the military, we train female soldiers, or you don't even have to go male, female. You know, you can have a lone soldier attacked by a group or by somebody who's much bigger than, stronger than them, where victory, or, you know, knocking out the other person, tapping them out, putting them in a headlock, choking them out, that's never a possibility. The only possibility is overwhelming them and getting away. And that's kind of where my shift was, because that's how I was taught. You've got somebody in front of you, they grab you by the throat, or, you know, or whatever, they come at you with a knife, you break their hold, you start hitting them, and you keep on hitting them until they're on the ground and can't fight anymore. Now, that's nice when it's, you know, two skilled, strong fighters, one against the other. But if we're talking a huge overbalance of power and knocking them out is just not going to happen, so maybe I can train you to break the choke, kick them with the balls, scratch them in the face, and overwhelm them. But then you better start running, because if you're going to follow that up with another three punches, a knee to the groin, a hammer strikes, the attacker is going to start quickly understanding what's happening, and now you're in a fight. So that's kind of where I've still got the disconnect between, yeah, you know, it's all about winning, but in reality, sometimes winning is just, it's not even on the cards. And that's where, again, the martial arts aspect of the fighting is, if I find the right, you know, Chinese master with the white beard, and I study long enough in that monastery in China, you know, the Shaolin monastery, whatever, then I can beat everybody, like in Kill Bill. I can be an unstoppable force. But that's not reality. And even, you know, you're going to find yourself sometimes in battles where you can't win. You just won't be able to win. And all you can hope to do is to survive and get away, because the longer you stay over there, the more risk you're going to get killed. And it takes some humility. It takes some humility to go in and understand that I can't hope to win this fight, but if I try to get out of it, then maybe I'll live.
I think also when you train Krav Maga, you cannot afford yourself to study or to train a technique with disconnection from the situation. It can work when you prepare for jiu-jitsu or boxing fight, because the situation is completely clear. You will be in a fight one-on-one with another guy, so you can teach you, he hold you like this, he attack you like this, you need to change your position, you need to do like this. In the Krav Maga field, the situation is unconnectable, part of the situation. So you cannot teach kick to the pad, okay? Who you kick? When you kick, what you do after you kick, in what situation you can kick, in what situation you can't kick. Okay, you need all the time. This is what I teach my instructors to do. From the first palm strike, they need to understand the situation. In what situation I
expect. I have an expectation.
I expect him to attack with open palm to the nose of the guy in front of him. So we need to deliver all the dish, everything inside. So when I see instructor teaching only the technique, attacking with the butt of the rifle, when speak about all the situation, in what situation you want a soldier to attack somebody like this, and what he do immediately after. So the scenario training, it should be from the beginning, from the first move till the last part when he try to simulate all the scenario with all the acting and with all what we always try to do, okay, to imitate the reality. But it should be from the beginning. So this is, again, what I believe in. You need from the first technique, need to study all the situation, not only the technique. And that's what I try to do.
I like
it. Because it's not completely, because somebody hold your hand and you need to do this technique. Who holding my hand? Guy that he holds my hand, and the other hand he pull his knife out? or maybe old lady that's screaming because we are arresting her terrorist son, or maybe somebody that, I don't know, he's afraid I see something in his document, so he holds me. So you cannot disconnect the technique from the situation.
Mm. Okay. I like that. I like that. And I think that helps a lot. So to be a good Krav Maga instructor, self-defense instructor, you have to have a good understanding of the situation, of where the skills are applying. And it's not just about how well you can kick and how good you can punch and how good you can even teach that, but it's about how good you can prepare the mental aspect of your student to be able to carry it out. Because you can be the best puncher in the world, but if you can't apply it, understand where you have to apply it, and if you're not ready mentally to do that, it's not going to help you.
And there are a lot of people that train to punch in the pad and they don't even understand what they're doing. You punch somebody in the face. Okay, what the mental part of this? What will happen? When the last time you punch somebody in the face? Maybe this is somebody older than you, or younger than you, bigger than you. Okay, you will be completely afraid. Maybe if somebody will be near you, your little son, and you will need be to think about a retreat after what you do. Okay, so you need to deliver all the package, not only the move.
Specific situations in which a soldier was attacked that you researched, in which the training saved their life. I want to hear to the detail that you can provide. What was the situation, what the soldier actually did that was helped, and then maybe how that affected the training that you delivered. What did you learn from that situation that you put into the field for your soldiers?
Okay, we had a few years of a lot of knife attacks. It was Intifada Tasakinim, knives Intifada, and a general of... Hela Logistica of logistics, not combat soldiers, ask me to deliver hand-to-hand self-defense training for his soldiers because people was literally afraid to go around. Okay, it was all over the state, like I think 2 years. And when you were with a soldier uniform, then your chance to be in attack is higher than when you were civilian. And I remember this, one of my reserve instructors going to this base, and this guy was a truck driver, okay? And he studied 60-minute self-defense, how to block hand with a knife, what, how to attack with the other hand, how to use your leg to push him away and to scream and to disengage. Okay, and one of the guy, I think months after the training, is exactly what happened to him. He'd been attacked. Okay, I spoke with him on the phone. Okay, actually, you can speak a lot about this situation because it's also a situational awareness to trust your instincts. He knew that his guy is problematic second before he'd been attacked, just because he looked in his eyes split second more than usual. He told me, I understood that he's problematic, but he didn't follow his instinct. He continued to walk. And the other guy attacked him in the neck, but in the second attack, he turned away. And he did exactly what he was, what he studied. He blocked, attack, kick, scream, run away. And people came to help. So I studied from this case. So even one professional class, even to an untrained guy, can be very, very effective when you do it right. So it was a good lesson for me. This is, I think, one of the key principles of a Krav Maga. After every class, you should be sufficiently more able to deal with this kind of situation than before class. You don't need to train for years. 60 minutes. After this 60 minutes, your ability to deal with it is just enormously higher than it was before. This is one of the cases. Of course, I have many like this. You can see that when people do their training very close to the situation, as close as possible, their ability to react is much higher than people that don't do it. So you need to live in this world. Also in shooting, when you always ready to pull your gun and shoot. Okay, if the last time you shoot was 2 years ago, and you carry your gun just for fun, it won't happen. You all every day you're ready to, that it will happen. And if you're ready, if you this is part of your awareness, a part of your world, I believe you will react. And so this is the way you live your life. It's not only the training. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's not easy.
So this guy, he is not a combat soldier. He was a truck driver.
No.
He had a 1 hour class. And how long after was he attacked?
I believe like 4 weeks, 4 or 5 weeks, something like that.
4 weeks ago.
A few weeks.
Yeah, that's a hell of an investment. And I agree with you. I think that's something that Krav Maga does, is that every lesson, and even from the first, you come out with skills that you could potentially use to defend yourself if you had to. It's not, doesn't have to be something that you train for 10 years until you get your black belt so that you can use it. It's from the very first class. It should make sense to you. And you should, I think that links well. You should also understand the situation which you're going to apply your techniques and how you're going to use it. You should have the full, you should have a game plan coming out. And if you don't, then I agree. I think the instructor dropped the ball somewhere. If it doesn't, if you don't understand where it fits into the picture.
This is part of your job as instructor, to understand the situation. Because if you understand that even after your first class, he can be attacked on the stairs of your gym. Okay, so your training is different than somebody you help him to prepare to a fight in 5 weeks from now. Okay, so every class, at least at IDF, it's a full package. It gives you basic tools. It starts with a review of what you already know. Then it gives you maybe some new tool, and then you end the class with a summarizing training, summarizing scenario, something that will imitate the real situation and also imitate your stress, your heart rate, the surprise level, whatever, as much as we can. Of course, it depends on the level of your trainees. But it should be a full package, because maybe the first class, it will be also the last class before the real attack.
Mm. Mm.
And your first response should be the best response.
Okay.
Because if not, it won't be effective.
you discussed before, you called Krav Maga a zero range system. How do you personally, how would you define Krav Maga?
Krav Maga, it's a fighting situation when the range is zero range, when you can smell the breath of your attacker and see, how you say, stimot.
You can see their feelings in the teeth.
Feeling in the teeth, yes, and the hair in their nose. Okay, this is the range, okay? And your rifle, your handgun, your weapon is not able to shoot. Okay, so this short situation before he kills you, or before you manage to maybe open gap and shoot him, I call it Krav Maga. It's all about. It's from 1 second to 15 second maximum of struggle, that it should be very effective. Okay, of course, it can be more than one attacker, also can be more than one soldier. He can attack you in whatever he choose, cold weapon. Maybe he will hold you, maybe you will find yourself on the ground, maybe he will, was it one case that soldier been hit with a small truck, okay? Motomisharikatan, he was hit in the chest, he felt, and after he felt, the driver came out and start to attack with the knife. So this is the way, you cannot imitate this. Okay, he was hit by a truck, and he managed to deal with it.
So Krav Maga is a system, it's official system used in the Israeli army, we use it in the police, in all branches of the defensive services. It's also taught, you know, around the world in various military and police or variations of it. What in your mind makes Krav Maga particularly effective for military, law enforcement, and professional applications? Why Krav Maga? Why specifically Krav Maga?
I think in the beginning we need to make a definition. What is Krav Maga for you? What is Krav Maga for me? Okay, for me, Krav Maga, it's a zero-range fighting situation when you're not able to use your firearm. Okay, and usually you need to win, to neutralize, to destroy your attacker in the end, using unarmed tools or maybe your weapon. This is Krav Maga for me. So this is a mindset. This is a way of thinking. This is training. I'm not talking about some specific techniques. Just from my experience, the tools that you give to a soldier should be very obvious, very instinctive, based on the reflex, very logical, because if not, it won't work. So this is Krav Maga for me. And by the way, if a soldier have some grappling or judo or boxing or kickboxing background, he in the very high chance he will use them. For me, it's Krav Maga. Even if he kicks somebody in the head, and we don't teach kicking the head in the IDF when the person is standing, of course, when he lying on the ground, it's the kicking the head is very welcomed. So this is for me. Krav Maga is a situation. Okay. Of course, when you need to control somebody, also we do a lot of police work. Of course, you do a hold and choke techniques and joint manipulation, and also two or three soldiers working on one guy. And this is also, we call it, it's part of the syllabus of Krav Maga, but it's not like fighting for your life Krav Maga. It's also, it's like police work. But we teach it. It's in my job, it's under the syllabus of Krav Maga also. So for me, this is Krav Maga. It's the situation. Okay, and I can use every tool, every technique from all over the world, all over the systems, in Chomrim B'Tnai.
On the condition.
On the condition that it will work. Okay, and to be able to work, you need to understand who you teach, how many time you have, what will happen to him, what stress level he will be in this kind of situation. So usually most of the techniques are very simple. I call it, it should work most of the time for most of the people. This is my definition for a useful technique.
You have an opportunity to work with a lot of delegations that come from around the world to Israel to train specifically to understand a bit more about Krav Maga that we do. I don't know what's classified or not, but can you speak about which countries, what type of units you've had to work with, and what they come to Israel to learn from you?
I worked with many delegations from all over the world, mostly Europe and the USA, but also other countries all over the globe. And there are different cooperation.
And this is police or military?
Not military, only military training. And it's interesting to see what other people do, what we do. And I think the difference, it's the mindset and the from 0 to 100, and also maybe the versatility of situation. We teach principles, not techniques. Okay, I take some situation and I use the situation to show the principle, and I explain my trainee that in the reality it maybe will be completely different. When you study what happened in a battlefield, sometimes it's crazy situation. I know a guy that his attacker throw a grenade and he tried to shoot him, and the bullet didn't came out because he was end of ammunition. So he ran, he took the attacker, and he used his body as a shield before the grenade explode. You don't teach things like that.
I've actually seen that. That was caught by There was a drone, yes. I think it was caught on a video.
Yeah, from drone cameras. Yeah. He's now a high rank. He's now colonel in ADF. Before he was a platoon commander.
I think it's even on YouTube. I'll see if I can find the link to that one.
Yeah, for example, or guy that was sitting in the bunker in Lebanon, and he wake up when the attacker, the Hezbollah attacker, came inside and start to shoot all over the room like this, and he survived because he was near the entrance. So he wake up and he kick the AK from bottom, and he take it out from hands of the attacker, and they start to fight. You don't teach things like that, but you can teach the mindset. And you can teach to react and also give basic tools. You need to hold, you need to kick, you need to attack. Okay, so we don't teach syllabus. We teach principles of fighting. And after that, we try to, when we start to test, also to see how the soldier understand the situation, how he apply the right technique in the situation. Okay, if he understand what to do, if he managed to put the right technique on the situation. Okay, don't show me a technique. Solve the problem. Okay, and if you manage to solve it, by the way, there are different ways to solve the problem. Okay, but if you manage to do it, okay, you pass the exam. If not, you need to train more.
Yeah, and I agree, and I like that 100%. It's not so much about getting them to memorize the techniques, which it's easy. I think in the civilian aspect, people fall into that hole very easy. It's about creating the simulations and the situations as realistic as possible, and then having each practitioner or each soldier or each civilian solve the problem relevant to them. One soldier is big, another one small, another one might have grappling experience, another one might be a boxer, another one maybe doesn't have any martial arts background. And again, the attacker is different and the scenario is different. So what carries across all possible situations and people is not the technique, but the ability to, and the experience to solve these type of problems of violence under stress. I mean, you and I, we're, let's say, more similar across the frame of, you know, we've both dedicated our lives to martial arts and we've both been soldiers, but, you know, we're the exception to the rule. We're not the person who's usually, you know, the Krav Maga or whatever you're training to protect yourself. It needs to be able to work for the combat soldier. It needs to be able to work for, you know, the mother who's picking her kids up from soccer. It needs to be able to work for everybody, and the solution for each one of those people is not necessarily going to be this. I'm very confident. I've trained for many years to punch people in the face. I have good strong fists. I have good solid bones in my hand. My wife's hands are much smaller. Even if she trained for as long as I did, there's much more likelihood of her breaking her fist when she was punching somebody than for me. So for her, the technique, the solution might be the right answer to the problem might be different. And I like that. And the only way you get there is if you put people in scenarios. If you say, hey, this is a technique and I want you to execute that technique, that's not necessarily, as an instructor, I don't necessarily know what the right answer is for you. I can put you in a situation where hopefully you can figure it out for yourself and have confidence in it.
Listen, a soldier's work is to fight. Okay, he need to get in contact. When we talk about infantry soldier, paratrooper, special force. Okay, when we talk about self-defense, I believe in most of the cases you solve the problem by awareness and avoiding the situation. Okay, this is the 99% of the cases. Okay, you don't need to get to the part when you already punch or kick somebody. Okay, in most of the cases you can solve it much, much before. And in civilian situation, in most of the cases, if you have a physical contact, is not because it's the right way of reaction, it's because your ego is driving you. Okay, and you want to prove everybody that you
But you see, I don't categorize. I don't think that falls into self-defense. I think that falls into fighting, right? If when you and I are exchanging punches over parking spot, that's not self-defense. That's fighting. If you and I are, you know, grappling inside a bar, chances are that's not self-defense. It's you and I are fighting over ego, right? If, as a civilian, I'm walking down the street and you surprise me and start stabbing me in the back, that's self-defense. That's not fighting. That's how I kind of make the I like to differentiate between fighting and assault, or in Hebrew, makot v'tkifa, let's say.
So that's what I say. What is a civilian instructor? What you teach? You teach self-defense, or you teach fighting on the street? Because sometimes the training can make worse. For example, I investigate the roots of Krav Maga, Kapap and Sport Shemushi, and what happened before. Mm-hmm. And there is edut.
Witness, like witness testimony.
Some guy is writing, some kapap is called before Krav Maga, it was face-to-face fighting. The different techniques, familiar with Krav Maga, I think much less, much less completed than Krav Maga. I teach a little bit of everything, and they need to fight. It's for their life. Again, the local population. Again, sometimes the police, the British mandate here. And they, one of the guys is telling, when we start to train, people train once a week, once in 2 weeks, and we do a knife defense, stick defense, and when we have these confrontations, much more people were injured and dead than before.
Mm-hmm.
So, because they believe that they can deal with the situation.
So they received
good example.
Poor training, because, and then they had false confidence.
They got for, and this is the good example of training that made you killed.
Mm-hmm.
And people that didn't train,
bad training. It's interesting because so certainly bad training can get you killed. But what's interesting is people think sometimes in terms of techniques, that bad techniques will get you killed, and it's not. And I think that they're missing the point. I think that bad techniques can get you killed, but it's misunderstanding the threat, not understanding the situation that you're in. Can get you killed out of, as you said, out of false confidence. I think that I'm in there for a boxing match, and the guy pulls out a knife.
So it's a lot of responsibility as an instructor to give the right tools, okay, and to explain. You need to understand you need to understand the situation as specific as possible. So what I said, all the conversation, then your training will be specific.
Well, I think as a combat soldier, to go back to that, my goal is not to be in fights. Like what we train for is, again, I think I like the word assault more than fighting, because we train to assault the enemy. Our goal is to outmaneuver, you know, the enemy infantry units or whatever it is, or the terrorists, catch them when they're not ready and hit them before they know what happened, so that there's zero casualties to our side. My goal is not to fight. My goal is to assault and to overwhelm. And I'm preparing for them to do the exact same thing for me. I'm not training to meet my attacker on equal force, on level ground, on the battlefield, and then to see who wins. If I get attacked, I probably won't be ready for it as a soldier. My unit was, because if we saw it coming, we'd preempt. We'd do something else. We'd move out. And I think that's a pretty, pretty good parallel to surviving a violent situation as a civilian. It's the same thing. If I saw it coming, I'd prevent it. I wouldn't find myself in the situation, or maybe I'd pick up a chair or do something. The last thing I want to do is find myself using my hands and my fists. So I think that there's a perfect parallel from the highest level of, let's say, as an infantry battalion, what your mission is. It's not yeah, we fight, but our goal isn't to fight. Our goal is to completely overwhelm our opponent before they see it coming. Or if we got caught by surprise, is to hit them so hard that we can, let's say, escape that situation and come back with a stronger force, or to live to fight another day. I think that the parallel between military combat and between civilian trying to survive assault as opposed to fighting in the car park, I think that there's a very strong connection.
Okay. You spoke about what you need to do in a reality. Avoid a fair fight to win. Of course, put your ego aside. And we call it act right. But does you teach and test like that? When you test somebody to avoid a choke, did he stand with his open eyes and let the attacker choke him and then he react? Mm-hmm. And there is a chair near him and he don't even try to use this chair and he's just doing the technique? Or he is doing what is the best for him in this kind of situation? We, in our training, Without being aware of it, we teach a lot of mistakes all the time. Okay, this is part of something that we need to be aware. If somebody is standing and waiting to attack with a knife, and then he block when he should do completely different, he could do completely different thing, he study a mistake. If he stands and waits when he aware of somebody coming and attacking him, and he's making a mistake. If he's not using the tools around him, he's making a mistake. So how you teach somebody to act right? Okay, so this is also a big challenge for most of the instructors. I think many of them not even aware of this problem.
Yeah, okay. I agree 100%. I think that that's really one of the biggest dangers is you creating the situation or creating even if you're aware of it, your biases can create the technique, the scenarios or the tests, which test what you want to test. I think a good example of it, I was speaking about this recently, is, for example, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, which I love Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I think it's a great sport. I really enjoy training in it. And I think it's very effective to get used to fighting on the ground. But what we found and this is not my criticism, this comes from the head of the great heads of the system from Gracie's, is that it's become a sports system where they designed the competition in which the techniques that they train on come out the best on top. For example, they won't be punching. They won't be slamming each other on the ground like you can do in wrestling or in judo. They won't do that stuff because, A, you risk injury, but also because their game plan or their techniques don't quite work as well. And what we need to understand as Krav Maga instructors is that we're not immune from that. We can, and I see it every day, that Krav Maga instructors, they build exercises and drills and tests that they think that they're testing the soldiers, but they're testing something very specific. They're creating the environment in which the techniques that they're teaching work best. And I think what you're talking about, which is something that I talk about often, is we need to do the opposite. We need to try to devise the scenarios in which the student, let's say, even maybe fails. Because in failure, we can learn something. When I want to create a scenario where the attacker is going to try to win and has a very good likelihood of, you know, beating the defender, and then that's where the learning starts to happen. When I try to do something and it doesn't work, and then I start to think on an individual level, why isn't this working? What do I need to do? And the moment I kind of can overcome it, then my goal as instructor is to change it completely on you and find a different way how I can make you fail until either I can't make you fail anymore or we run out of time.
Yeah. By the way, what you said, it's the best way to teach something is to build a situation when the thing you want to teach is the best solution. So it's the best way somebody to memorize it, because it's the only way out. And also creating a situation when you don't know what to do, and then the instructor tells you, do this, and it helps you. It also one of the fastest way to put it inside your memory. I push you to the pool, you don't know how to swim, and I tell you, take air in your lungs, you will stay above the water. So you do it. You don't even understand why, but you listen from it. So this is the way we teach and try to teach in the military. Okay. Give you a problem you cannot solve, then I give you a solution. This is the best way out of this problem. And this is the best way you memorize it. This is the best way to teach somebody something. I agree with it. That's what we try to do. And also, it's for me, it's easy. You know, I'm not obligated to syllabus or something. I have a problem, I give a solution, do whatever you want, just survive. Okay. So my job is easy. Okay.
Maybe yes. Before we finish up, I wanted to ask a little bit about maybe your background. How old were you when you started training Krav Maga?
I started a civilian Krav Maga. I was 9 years old. Had some problems in school. My parents told me, okay, study some self-defense. It was the closest, how you say, hook activity to our house. So I go to training. I think I couldn't even pronounce the name Krav Maga first 2 weeks of training. Okay, I was not born in Israel, and we came from Ukraine, so it was hard to pronounce. And then after I started to train, it was under an instructor named Uri Rafaeli, part of Chaim Zut a school. Okay, I did it, I think, till the army. Okay, also, age of 16, I decided to try boxing. Okay, so I combined boxing training with Krav Maga training. I earned my black belt in Krav Maga in age of 16. In those days, it was extremely early. And my second dan in age of 18. It's before I was recruited. Okay, so I was recruited to the job of Krav Maga instructor. Okay, because the head of the Krav Maga, that was those time, he some way he knew about me and he wanted me in the job. So it was like I was born to do this. So I did it in the mandatory service, after in the reserve service. And like 10 years ago, I was recruited to a civilian. I'm like a civilian working for the army.
And the military contractor.
Military contract. So that's what I do.
And what drew you? What was your experiences training in Krav Maga as a child? What did you get out of it?
It was full contact, I think. It was a lack of knowledge, you know. It was not like now. You press on YouTube, you can see everything. It was just you train and without mouth guard and without chin guard and sometimes without gloves, okay. But you train hard with the contact. You not always have a solution. The instructor doesn't give you a solution. He put you in a problem. Try to solve it. Okay, so this is, I think this is a good part. Okay, it is not very technical, but it's the mindset. Okay, all the instructors, all the guys, ex-military guys, mandatory. This was in the Golani, and this was in the Shayetet, and this, and everybody understanding fighting and shooting people, and this the mindset. And it was now I understand how good it was. Okay, I think the times that the gun and never come back. Okay.
Mm. I mean, I remember growing up, I was in the sister gym, if you could call it, to your gym. You were in training in Khadera. I think I was training in Netanya, both pretty rough cities. And I remember as a kid, like, you know, we grappled, we had submission fighting, we had sparring, but like you said, like, mouth guards were like optional. I remember they only came in later. Groin guards, like if you wanted, you could wear them. Most people didn't. And like submission grappling, like the submissions were, you put your thumb into somebody's eye and you start pushing until they can't take it anymore and they tap. I remember a few occasions going to school where I couldn't see from one eye for a couple of days. And that's just how we used to train. You put on boxing gloves and you just start swinging at each other like crazy, as hard as you can. No weight classes, nothing. And then I had to do, when I started boxing a bit later, I had to do some unlearning where you don't just go into the boxing ring and start swinging as hard as you can wildly, because if you're facing somebody who's a little bit skilled, they're just going to cover, take their time, let you, you know, go crazy. And then the moment you stop, they'll hit you with a good one and knock you down. What's interesting is I've since then come full circle, and I agree. I had some criticism about how I was taught, because, you know, when I stepped into the boxing ring and when I stepped into, you know, to grapple with professional grapplers, the skills didn't transition. And I was quite critical about how I was taught, because I spent years training, and I say, how can it be that, you know, I trained for years hard, and I step into a boxing ring with people who've been boxing for less time than I've been doing Krav Maga, and I simply don't match up. So I was quite critical of this, and I've since come full circle. And like you said, I've learned to appreciate what we were doing back then. Where, yeah, it's not the right way to win a boxing match. You can't just go wild. But there's this part of learning the mental aspects of going from zero to 100, and not taking your time and feeling each other out, or even you know, trying to execute the techniques and being technical. There's something to be said to just going crazy. I think that there's a balance. I think that there's the balance between craziness and being able to switch that mental switch of survival and fighting as hard as you can, and having techniques to back it out. But I was critical, and I think that they got something right over there of just putting you into the fire and saying, you know, swim or drown. And
I also can say about myself, when after I did, you know, boxing and Muay Thai and kickboxing, I just find a full contact platform to continue to practice my Krav Maga. It was Krav Maga practice, just under rules of boxing, under rules of kickboxing, but the state of mind and the mentality was a Krav Maga mentality. Okay, and also still now when I spar, I don't use breaks. I use, sometimes I can imitate a headbutt on a bite, or I use an elbow when I'm forbidden, or knee, to imitate knee to the groin or whatever. Okay, I never stop in the middle. I never break. I just train to fight. Okay, I just use this full contact platform. So it's very, very good. And yes, I'm happy that I started with Krav Maga, because I too had little criticism. And by the way, it's why in late age, comparatively, I started to do a ring fighting, because I felt that I need to try the full contact, to try to really, really knock people out. And I'm happy I did this too. But all this part of puzzles are complete each other. It is not complete with only combat sport training or only with Krav Maga training. I think the combination made me understand what I understand now.
What do you think the role of sparring is in Krav Maga? You know, obviously we're training to a very big part of our toolkit is punching people in the face or hitting people. How important is full contact sparring for Krav Maga?
It's not no. First of all, it's the mindset. You need to fight. Okay, every time that you fight with somebody that you have the same goal. Okay, and you fight for this goal. This is sparring. It's always under some set of rules. Even taking from you a ball and you try to take it back. Okay, this is sparring. We fight for the same. Okay, so this is a mental spark. Overcome your attacker and win. This is number one. Number two is trying to apply your techniques under pressure. Okay, you can do a million times inside defense against a straight punch, but if you didn't manage to do it in the stress of fight, it won't work. Okay, and also if it's competition, it's even more. Okay, and if it's a reality, it's even more. Okay, so it's the platform that you try to use your mental and your physical tools and combine them together. So make it not only theoretical but also practical, and also stay, how you say, anev.
Humble. Stay humble.
Stay humble, because no matter who you are and what you do, okay, the reality will surprise you always. Okay, stay humble. This is the most important. That's why I spar at least twice a week, in order to stay humble. Okay, young kids come motivated, punch me in the face hard. It brings me back. Okay, to the source.
Stay humble or be humbled. I like that. I think yes, that's an excellent place to leave it for now. Yes. Danny, thank you so much for your time. It's a pleasure to finally sit down and chat a bit. It's been a long time coming. And I wish you all the best in the important role that you're playing that you've been playing in the IDF for the last 10 years. If you've been teaching Krav Maga for long enough, you've had a student that, and probably a few that have used what you've taught them to save their life. I've had a few, and it's rare that I speak to a Krav Maga instructor who's been doing it for over 10 years and can't tell you of a few stories that, you know, their students use the training to protect themselves. And I think in your role of, you know, God knows how many, as the head instructor and the guy who's in charge of instructors and running the syllabus, I can't even start to imagine the statistics of how many people have used what they've learned either from you or from the instructors that you oversee to protect themselves. So that's quite a bit of a responsibility.
Maybe dealing with a big organization as the army and the teaching and trying to change the DNA of organization, and this is maybe a topic for a new podcast in the future.
That
how
is
to
the
work in the army.
That is the one last question I've got for you, and maybe we'll save it for the next time. Is I want to know how Krav Maga has changed. Because it certainly has changed over the years. I'd like to know how it changed in the military, but people are just going to have to come back and listen to next time we chat.
Okay. Thank you, Ron.
Thank you very much, Danny. Take care. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe. And if you're feeling especially generous, leave me a rating and a review. The full episode notes are available on ronengelman.com, where you'll find links to what we discussed today and information on how you can train with me and my team in Israel. Stay safe, stay healthy, please stay well, and I'll see you around.